Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Greetings all, welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio. I'm Dan Stoltz and I'll be your host today. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com or on Twitter at itproguru. Today we have Ned Pyle in the studio to teach us about distributed file system replication, otherwise known as DFSR. Technology has changed much over the years with all the great file and storage enhancements in Windows Server 2012 and R2. I thought now would be a good time to dive into replication. Ned, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dan.
Perhaps you can start us with a quick intro. Who are you? What are you doing? Maybe a little bit about you and your online blog.
Sure. I'm Ned Pyle. I'm a program manager in Windows Server and the file server and cluster team. And I, amongst other things, own DFS replication as a product. And I work on a bunch of other stuff as well. We chatted before about scale-out file server and SMB3 and some other kind of wacky stuff, and I own some sort of dead products as well that I don't even bother to talk about, and hopefully nobody comes and yells at me about them.
Well, we'll try to stay away from the taboo stuff that's not relevant anymore.
Don't ask me any NFS questions.
Yeah, but you've got some awesome stuff, especially with the PowerShell built into the distributed file system replication today. And in fact, well, why don't we start there? You know, I understand the DFSR's service is it's a master replication engine that's used to keep folders synchronized on multiple servers. Maybe we can just kind of start off with an overview for those that might not be familiar with the technology and how it's used.
Sure. And if you've not heard of it by now, it came out in 2003 R2, so you kind of had to have been under a rock at this point. But it's like you said, state-based, it's multi-master, which means that I can have 100 servers and any one of them could originate changes in theory. Typically, it's not done that way. Most people configure it basically in one of two mainline scenarios. One, I want to put data on one server and push it to lots of servers. It's like, so we call that the branch office data distribution scenario. So say I wanted to push out a copy of all the HR docs. There's going to go, doesn't matter, they're all the same. Everybody has to read them. They have to go to all the sites. It's going to be PDFs. I can just drop it into one folder and it'll automatically synchronize with 1,000 other servers. And the other one is more of a one-to-one relationship of data collection, where I say I got hundreds of branch offices and the users work in the branch office. They have a share out there, they write their data there, and I don't want to maintain my backups in the branch office because that's usually fairly disastrous to try and make some poor non-IT person swap out tapes and things. So,
or worse, they think they're backing it up and they're not.
Yeah, that's the classic. And then, so instead of that, well, you drop them in, the users don't detect any difference. They're just using the same share they ever did. But unbeknownst to them, the data is replicating backwards into the main office. And, you could have hundreds of branches just talking to one or a handful of hub servers. And then you back those up, at the main office, and you're all set.
Awesome. I imagine probably the heaviest payload is probably that initial build or the rebuild of a data set. So maybe we can discuss that and then maybe dive into some of the cloning capabilities that are new.
Yeah, that is the nature of the beast. Is the first time you replicate anything, and this goes for any kind of replication engine, it takes as long as it takes to actually copy all the data. And, you can be slower or faster when you compare each product because each one's better or worse at doing things. DFSR's mantra is actually not about performance, but about bandwidth consumption. So it's designed to put as little data on the wire as possible because it was designed for the days of, what networks were like in 2004. Mm-hmm. And really what you wanted to be able to do then was say, I don't want to use up the network too much because a branch office connection back then was pretty poor probably.
And
but also
a lot of cases over modem, yeah.
Yeah, over modem, ISDN. I mean, if you had a part of a T1, with bursting to 120, kbps, you were looking pretty good.
Yep.
So The idea being that we have this algorithm we built called RDC, or remote differential compression. And what it does is it takes a file apart and chunks it up and figures out, after you sent the file once and you start modifying it later, it can tell which parts change and just send those change parts. And so it takes all the processing and puts it on the two servers to think about not sending the file. And then when they finally agree, they just send the parts that matter. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. That works great. It still works great. I have one customer in, I have several customers in the U.S. who do this with several thousand servers all at once. But if you've got the bandwidth and you've got the network and you've got a lot of data, you really kind of want to kick this thing in the guts and have it go faster. And until 2012 R2, this simply wasn't possible. So prior to 2012 R2, and I might slip up and say blue here a few times, you can just forgive me right now. But prior to R2, you could pre-seed data, which is a dumb word, I recognize, because seeding is the pre part, but this is just what the industry likes to say. You pre-seed this data on both servers, and then you start up replication, and in theory it says, well, all the files appear to be the same, I've got nothing better to do, and I'm done. And that does save a lot of time. It saves a lot of time even with the old versions of DFSR, usually about half. It's about twice as fast, which is pretty good.
So preceding it, just to be clear on that, preceding is like taking data transfer via, you know, a physical disk or a CD DVD series or something, and or is everything has to be local whenever you start?
Whatever you do, you can take a backup and restore it. I've had some customers actually just break mirrored hard drives. You know, break the mirror and send one of the drives through the
awesome
mail.
Awesome solution. Yep.
Yeah, I mean FedEx is a pretty good way to pre-seed data. Especially if you're talking about, you know, a couple of terabytes and the network not being all that great in the first place, you can save a ton of time by just shipping it physically over there and then just tying it all up at the end.
Right.
So that's good, and that gets you about half again as fast as not doing it at all, because now DFSR doesn't actually have to copy the files. It just has to think about the files and then decide not to copy them. But this thinking about process is actually still pretty slow and fairly serialized, because when DFSR was first built, we didn't really support replicating that many files, and the user base that we had back then didn't have that many files to replicate. The idea of having tens of millions of files and, you know, terabytes of data was something that a normal company just wouldn't have even conceptualized.
With the data explosion now, that's the norm, right?
Yeah, I think I probably have millions of files on my laptop now.
Exactly.
So, it's, right. So this thing we came up with in 2012 R2, the first really big major feature to DFSR in some years, is called cloning. And what cloning does, it says, all right, well, we have this startup process where both servers spend a lot of time looking at the data, sort of consuming it, and then over the wire, over RPC, sharing the information and validating that there's nothing to do, and then just moving on to the next file, the next file, the next file. It does a few at a time, but it's still fairly slow. So the idea of cloning is saying, well, what if we have the first server look at all the data, put it in its database, you know, all the metadata about it, and track some information about the fidelity of those files. And then rather than having the other server do the same thing, we actually export the database from the first server, put it on the second server, have it come up and still check to see that, okay, well, I have this fidelity information that came from the other box, and we look at my preceded copy, and okay, everything's fine, and then it's done. And when you do that, I'll talk a little bit more about the fidelity piece here in a sec, but when you do that, we basically reduce our initial sync time by around 99% or more. So if it takes, say, 3 weeks to do initial sync with your current set of data, it would probably go down to being a couple of hours.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's pretty impressive. And when I do demos, or as a tech ed or tech radio, stuff like that, usually I can do a demo of 100,000 files on my laptop running Hyper-V client and a couple of VMs. The entire thing with 100,000 files is usually over within about 30 seconds. Because the size of the files no longer matters at all. When we do this cloning, this validation process where we build up our knowledge of the files. We don't look at the hash of the entire file during the... You can. You have the option to do so if you want. It's slower. But by default, we look at the data stream... security, the file size, and when the file was modified. And it's very difficult for anybody to change a file and not change one of those things. You have to kind of be going out of your way to do it.
Right.
And so rather than calculating, like, say, the hash of a 1 gig file and then talking with another server about it, the file sizes no longer matter because every single file has the exact same amount of time taken to just examine it and say, like, okay, this is my view of that file because the data stream doesn't matter anymore. So, I mean, it's nice and linear and it's very predictable. So if you test it out and try it and it takes, you know, 10 hours with a million files, then it'll take, you know, if you have 10 times the files, it'll take 10 times longer than that. It's pretty easy to predict what it'll do.
Right. Well, it's also awesome that you can, if you want that extra auditing or security, you know, compliance factor, that you can enable the hash, even though it is going to take more time.
Yeah, you could use, so we basically have three options. So I'm kind of jumping sideways here, but for 2012 R2, prior to that, there was no PowerShell for DFSR. And one of the other major things we did in 2012 R2 was add a complete set of 42 commandlets and a new module, all done from scratch by hand by a poor developer here who almost died in the effort. And it's all he did was stare at our PowerShell for a year. I don't know who he ticked off to get that job. But he's actually a very nice guy, and he's very detail-oriented, which is good. So when we got it all done, basically we said, well, how are we going to do this cloning thing? Well, we'll have this PowerShell, and it'll allow us to basically run two commands, because we weren't going to have a GUI for this. We didn't have the time or the budget. But we said, okay, well, cloning is going to be super good. We want to make the admin experience to be as easy as possible because not everybody likes PowerShell. I personally find certain PowerShell modules to be extremely aggravating. So I wanted to make sure that we had this mantra we kept repeating, which is we don't want our PowerShell just to be a different way of doing things. We want it to be a better way of doing things. Like, you'll want to use the PowerShell, not just feel like it's just another way of doing the same stuff you already do. And to do that, we made sure that this commandlet was as easy as running, say, export my clone, pick a drive where you want to put the database that you're exporting, and go. That's it. No extra thinking required. And
so
when import, same deal.
So whenever you're talking about that, you're really talking about the setup. I mean, that's how easy it is to, to start the replication, right?
That's just to export and import the clone database. When you actually run through this process, all you do, you could take existing replication as long as it's already running 2012 R2, and that's a little tricky, right? I mean, in the future, this will be easier. Everybody's, you know, still sniffing around the watering hole in this thing right now. If you have a running replication or if you want to build a new replication, you just pick a server which is already replicating and just choose export. Or if you create a new one, you simply create it without any partners and say export. And then you go to other servers and import and then either, you know, and then add them into replications. What you're doing is saying, give me the database out, put it on this other server, suck the database back in, and then just enable replication normally. And it will figure out for you all the, oh, I was cloned, and oh, I all this stuff. And even if the users have been changing data in the meantime, because obviously cloning takes a little bit of while and you don't want to freeze your entire environment, it'll figure out the differences, and that'll just be the overhead of letting your users mess with the data is how much slower the initial sync will now be. But even if it takes an extra couple of hours, if you were looking at, so I'll give you this example. When we first started, we just took 2012 and bought the hardware so that we could clone, so that we could replicate 100 terabytes, which was very expensive. We started this thing up. We were just using the old-fashioned 2012 server. And after 2 months, we gave up on the test because it had only about... at our estimate, it was going to be about 300 days. So when we went back and did all this stuff and we did all of our work and validation and coding, and then we went through and did a bunch of same passes on the same server, and we were able to do all of that, you know, 100 terabytes, and I think it was 110 million files. And it was down to, I want to say it was 4 days. I mean, it's with look, a long weekend would have been enough to do what would have about to take us
a year,
10 months, 11 yeah. months, probably. Yeah. It wasn't linear either. That 300 days we were kind of just estimating because it was getting slower as time went on.
So it's interesting that you're not only in, drastically increasing the time, but you're also severely positively impacting the lack of bandwidth. I imagine that's needed to make all that happen.
Yeah, theoretically it's zero.
Right.
Zero bandwidth. So we're actually still within our mantra of, you know, don't chew the network. This kind of nicely all worked together. It was, you know, we didn't have to actually make any protocol changes. We were able to reuse some columns in the database that had fortunately been set aside for these kinds of scenarios. You know, sort of unpredicted 10 years ago, but maybe someday it'll be interesting scenarios.
Yep.
And so it really is quite a simple, and luckily for us, because of those the lack of crazy changes we had to make for this to work, it's actually quite a reliable system because we're recycling a lot of really proven parts of the FSR.
So, you know, you talk about 100 servers or thousands of servers and doing replication. I mean, it just sounds like a total nightmare to set up and configure. So what is the setup and you know, how's it done?
Yeah, I mean, it. So the thing I always use as a gets a chuckle out of the audience is I say, okay, let's just imagine for a second that I'm going to set up a three-server hub and spoke. So it's three servers, two branches and one hub. And I use the GUI. I use the snap-in. It's about...
Well, let me guess. 4 days and a lot of Tylenol or Advil.
If you've never set it up before, you'll probably have to do it a couple times because conceptually it can be a little hard to understand, you know, a big multi-master replication system. But I'll be kind. I've said you've done your reading. You know what you're doing at this point. At least you're relatively... The amount of time it takes to click through the GUI and just set things up and follow through the UI, very fast. You know, maybe, a handful of screens. I would say probably more than, let's see if I remember how many screens it would be. I think it's like maybe like 14 or 16. And you're in a GUI and you're clicking and you're mostly browsing and selecting stuff. You probably get through the whole thing in a minute. And then if you're going to use our old DFSR admin command line tool, which is frankly a piece of junk, you'd have to type like 12 different commands. So that's already getting a little bit aggravating to me. But if I use the PowerShell, I'm only 5 commands. But okay. I'm pretty sure that I'll my guy with the GUI is going to beat my guy with the PowerShell. Because the GUI, you're just clicking, clicking, clicking. So I say, all right, yeah. Now I'll set up 100 server hub and spoke. The 100 server hub and spoke, you'll have to click through 122 screens because there's no bulk anything in the snap-in. And you're going to have to select everything, get it all right, browse. I'm being very kind when I say 120. I mean like 122 dialogues. I'm not counting popped-out.
Multiple pages and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I'm not counting any popped-out sort of selections or any customization or diving into any tabs or anything. So you're in there for a month screwing it up. With the DFSR admin command, the old command line tool, I think you'd run like 400 commands. 400. It's ridiculous. No chance. With the PowerShell, if I give you a text file that has a list of the servers you want to use, it'll be just 4 commands.
Wow.
And honestly, we have a PowerShell script that we even made. We put on the TechNet script gallery a sample that does the most common operations. And you're free to, anybody can mess with it. It's a script gallery. Anybody can change it and alter it. One command. Just one command. So that's what I was saying about I want my PowerShell to be desirable, not just there.
Awesome. Excellent. So so that's to get it set up and initially running. What does it take to actually, you know, once it's set up, do the clone? Is that included in that 5 scripts, or is that another script that has to be run?
Well, if I was going to do the cloning, I actually would just have those exact same commands I would run. You know, the 5 commands, except that I would just be doing them slightly. I'd be pausing in the middle to run my cloning and then running the final couple commands.
Okay. So you could still do it all with PowerShell.
Still do it with 5, yeah, easily.
Okay. Awesome. So if this is all PowerShell, well, I mean, I guess it's PowerShell or through the wizard. Is there a, you know, and this takes time, at least, you know, like I said, it could be a couple of hours. Is there a graphical user interface to kind of track your progress? And particularly in the cloning process, where it's got a, you know, where you've got to copy the data over and stuff, is there a way to see where it's at and how it's doing?
As far as cloning goes, we didn't have the time. It has no GUI, it just has the PowerShell. We didn't have the time in the PowerShell to add any sort of, like, little funny progress bar. Mm-hmm. And that actually kind of really annoyed the developer I was working with on this. He really kind of wanted something to show while it did things. But what we did
get... nice.
It is nice. But what we did actually do, which is actually far more accurate, because I think progress bars are usually pretty crappy, is...
Yeah, they are.
In the event log, we basically write an event repeatedly as we process a chunk of files. So 65,000 files, here's an event of saying, we did this many, we have this many to go out of the entire block. And if you just say, like, okay, well, I'm seeing these events are coming. I know I got a million files. I'm seeing, you know, 4 events per minute or 10 events per minute or 1 event per second. I can just look at the event log and see approximately how long it's been going and when it's going to end. And you'll know exactly how many files as opposed to like a progress bar. In the future, what I would love to see is kind of a combination of a progress bar along with a counter telling you the number of files, you know, making so you don't have to do any sort of math. But that'll be some days on the road. We also have perf counters, a health report you can run. There's debug logs if you really enjoy, falling asleep at the wheel, stuff like that.
So, I mean, it sounds like there is a solution, though it may not be very elegant or pretty. You can at least get there from here, so that's good.
Our main goal is that you don't care about progress because it's done so fast.
It's done so fast. Awesome. So, can you set up schedules for replication? Can you define schedules?
Absolutely. You can define DFSR has replication groups, which are just sort of a collection of replicated folders. You can set schedules at the entire group that affect all the folder connections, or you can do them on the individual connections if you're, you know, kind of batty and want to say, like, this branch office replicates at these hours and this one at this hour. So you can control the bandwidth actually used as a throttler in there. And with the PowerShell, the nice thing about it is now that you're – that was something that was actually quite tedious to do in the past because you're going through a GUI, you know, sort of selecting endless little tiny knobs. You know, this one of those UIs where it's basically like Minesweeper, mm-hmm. you know, where it's blocks. You're kind of flipping them
and their
color. Their color and position changes indicate, like, you know, what if they're on or off and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And with the PowerShell, you could just say, like, oh, I just decided I want all these connections to be, you know, open from 9 to 5 and closed, you know, from this time to this time. And with a PowerShell, it's easy as choosing a wildcard and saying go, or, you know, giving a partial name. We made sure that all of our PowerShell supports what we call globbing or wildcards, as well as collections. So you can choose arrays and just say, like, I'll give it these 10 connections and I'll give it these 20, or I'll just say asterisk, just go do everything, I'll come back later. It's pretty easy to batch.
So that also implies that it's pretty easy to, if you want to do a mass update, say you've got a new revision of a whole set of a whole structure of files, and you want to replicate that or whatever. It's pretty straightforward to send that out at a particular time schedule.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, if you want to be able to blow out configuration changes, or, you know, make sweeping changes, or set up replication in a very, you know, large scale way, or automate setting up replication. I have some, you know, here at Microsoft, we have a software distribution system, just like anywhere else, for people to go and actually install stuff on their desktops. Mm-hmm. And it goes to, I think, 180 countries. And some of it's replicated using, like, you know, big, weird, serious SAN replication stuff, but a lot of it actually uses DFSR. And if they want to add new replication and stuff, nobody's going to sit around clicking around in a snap-in when they could just have a provisioning system that says, well, I'm going to put out this new software and click a button, and we're going to have something go and set up the replication and do everything for me and just be done.
Yep, awesome. So is there a way to track changes and, you know, kind of see what's been deleted? And or by whom, you know, changed or deleted?
Yes. So, in a couple different ways. One, DFSR actually has what amounts to a recycle bin called the Conflict and Deleted Folder. Now, the bad thing about this is it's got a quota on it. We made ours a little bit larger in this release. I want to say that we changed it to 4 gig, but typically it's only about 600 meg. And anytime you delete a file or conflict a file, so the thing about multi-master is you have to have something. Somebody has to win if you and I are both editing the same file but on two different servers.
Right.
And we're not coordinating our actions together because there's no locking mechanism here. This is just straight-up replication. But this folder exists for those types of scenarios. And if I'm on one DFSR server and I delete it through its share, the file is deleted, and then the replication is deleted. Sorry, the deletion is replicated. We have to tell the other servers to go and just get rid of it on their behalf. And they put it into this folder called Conflict and Deleted, which before 2012 R2, you really couldn't do anything about it. But now we have PowerShell to recover data from it. It's called Restored DFSR Preserved Files, I think. Preserved data? Preserved files.
Okay.
So the thing about PowerShell that I love, my favorite thing is the autocomplete. So I can type Restore DFSR and hit Tab, and then I don't remember the name of these commandlets. So you can use that to actually look and see which files are deleted in there and actually recover them if you like, or recover various versions of the files, and it understands all the usual PowerShell logic where I could say, where something is, this age or this version or something like that. But also, if the file is truly gone, like it got deleted, and then the deletion itself was pushed out of that folder based on just enough time elapsed and enough other deletions and things happened, is you have the option to go, we have a WMI method. And I have a very boring article on this, if you want to find it, back on the Ask DS blog that's called Where's My File? Root Cause Analysis of DFSR Data Deletion. And it was written, seven years ago, by yours truly. And basically what it boils down to is it shows you how to run this WMI method. And you could use WMIC or get WMI, invoke WMI method in PowerShell, or whatever floats your boat for WMI. And you feed it the name of the file that it used to have, and you can use that to extrapolate where it got deleted from. And from that, you can sort of tell, hopefully, who deleted it, because at that point, hopefully, you have auditing turned on your file servers.
Right, and auditing should give you that.
Yeah, because DFSR doesn't care or track who deleted anything. He doesn't know about people. He just knows about files. And he could tell you, if somebody modifies a file or somebody, alters the security, he can tell you big, bold strokes things about a file, but he can't tell you about the contents. He doesn't care. And he can't tell you who did stuff. He doesn't care.
So you actually printed my last couple of questions with the restores. Is that, if you do need to do the restore, is it pretty easy to do? Is it quick, and how does it replicate it?
In the past, so if you've ever done this in the past, there's actually a BB script out there called restoredfsr.vbs, which I wrote on the first ever DFSR support case. And that DFSR support case came in. This is literally, I think, the same day that 2003 R2 came out. And some fellows were trying this out. This goes back to your earlier point about how long does it take to understand DFSR. Well, these fellows unfortunately didn't do any of the reading. So the first thing they did was they set up DFSR.
Well, back then we weren't as good at putting it out either, right?
Well, for his, at that point, they had an excuse of saying this thing's only been out for one day. But unfortunately, they were doing all the learning in production. So they're in production, and they say, well, we're going to set up replication here. And you set up replication, you pick a folder, and you say, this is the primary, and you pick another folder in another server and say, this is what's called the non-authoritative. And the primary will be replicated to the non-authoritative, and then the files will simply mirror until it's done. And then once it's done, you start making changes and they go in either direction. Well, that conflict and deleted folder has another one called pre-existing. And that pre-existing folder says, if I set up replication and I don't have the file on the primary, but I do on the secondary, I'll make a copy here just in case. You're not supposed to let users mess around with this not yet ready server, but you did, so we'll preserve the file. Well, the problem is these fellows picked the server with no data to be the primary and then made the secondary be the one with all the data. SR did exactly what it was told. Said, okay, I made these folders look the same. It's now empty. And then they called with tears and screaming and said, what do we do now? And we wrote this VB script kind of on the fly that night to go through. We keep this manifest, this XML file that keeps track of all these preserved files or deleted files. And if you read
so,
that
so
manifest...
So it stores the path as well,
it
right?
It stores the path. It restore. It keeps track of everything that used to be about that file since it got before it got moved. Mm-hmm. And looking at it as a human, it's indecipherable garbage as usual. But
it's just XML, I presume?
Yeah, it's just XML.
Yep, okay.
And if you look at the file system, unfortunately, it's also indecipherable because we mangle these files with some version information and some uniqueness data so that we don't accidentally overwrite them ourselves later on.
Right.
So you can't even just go back into that folder and say, well, I know the folder is there. I'll just put it all back because the contents are now mangled. So the preserve script used to, the VB script, would copy this stuff out for you, and it was very, very slow. And gross, and I'm very embarrassed to say that I worked on it. But the restore the FSR preserved data, preserved files stuff we have in the PowerShell now is crazy fast. And in fact, if you choose the default option, which is just move, put it back where it came from, go now, it's usually done pretty much instantly, no matter what, because the files are, you're not really moving files at that point.
You're just renaming.
You're just renaming them.
Yeah, awesome. Excellent. Well, I don't actually have any other questions. This technology looks really, really cool to me. So is there anything else that you would like to add?
We have so much stuff on the FileCab blog right now about all these new features. We have a ton of PowerShell that will really, I honestly think, will make your life easier if you're a longtime administrator of DFSR. You'll find some things that have been bothering you for years, whether or not you knew it, that you can finally do really easily. And we're really hopeful that people go out there and give all this stuff a try. And really the biggest, the most important thing for us doing all this for the more PowerShell, the management story, the cloning, the restore, all the other stuff we did, some tuning options we added, was to make it so that you could replicate more data. So our new support statement, having done all this work, is now you can replicate and be supported by Microsoft 100 terabyte of data. 70 million files per volume, and files as large as 250 gig.
Nice, and we'll make sure that we get those links onto the accompanying post with this video too on TechNet. So thank you very, very much, Ned, for all your help. And until I see you again, have a good day.
Great. Thanks again.